I want to say a very good morning to Laura Bates. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning.
Now, you've the author of a book called Everyday Sexism, and we're talking about what exactly?
We're talking about the whole spectrum of gender inequality, all the way through from the kind of more apparently minor things like street harassment that we're often told brush off, don't make a fuss about, all the way through things like sexism in the media, discrimination in the workplace, and up to sexual assault and rape.
So from these, I was watching your TED speech this morning. You remember doing that, obviously. And it covers the full gamut. So you could begin with the what might be called a relatively innocent wolf whistle passing a building site.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing I think that we're sort of trying to suggest is that it's a spectrum, and that the same ideas and attitudes about women that underlie some of those more minor incidents that we're often told, you know, we'll stop complaining about, they're the same ideas and attitudes about women as second-class citizens, about power, that are also at the root of the more serious things. And obviously it's not a simple case of cause and effect, but, you know, it's interesting that we've heard stories, for example, from women who've experienced street harassment and been told, you know, shrug it off, it's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. And when they've tried to kind of say no or just ignore it, it escalates and it becomes violent, and the guy has run down the street after them or started to, you know, call them really nasty and derogatory terms. So I think there's clearly something more there. You know, there's something at the root of that. There's a sense of entitlement. Mm-hmm. I have the right to appraise your body and let you know what I think of it. And that's kind of an example of the sort of escalation that I'm talking about.
All right. And your own story, Laura, is pretty shocking in the sense that you outline a lot of moments that were examples of everyday sexism that led to a tipping point, essentially. Can you run us through some of the things that happened to you? You seem to attract an awful lot of peculiar behaviour.
Yeah, I just had a particularly bad sort of week or so period during which, by pure coincidence, I had a lot of different things that happened. There was a guy who followed me home off the bus, really propositioning me quite aggressively, wouldn't take no for an answer, and followed me to my flat. There was a guy who sat down next to me on the bus and started stroking and groping my legs. And I was on the phone to my mum, so I said out loud, you know, this guy is groping me. And everybody else on the bus looked out the window. Mm. No one stepped in. And there was a real sense, you know, this is just normal. On with it. And I didn't want it to be normal anymore, so I started the project to collect people's stories and prove how bad it still was.
But you also recalled then the boss who sent you emails, the man who was kind of being inappropriate in extremis, sitting beside you on the bus, other stories that happened. Take us through some of those as well, because it's quite a catalogue.
Yeah, I mean, what was really shocking was that if those things hadn't all happened in the same week, I just realised I never would have thought twice about any of them because they were so normal. And it made me start thinking back to things like that had happened over the years, being cornered in a street at about 11 o'clock at night in Cambridge and having two guys walk up to me and really sort of corner me up against the wall and say something I can't repeat on the radio, but essentially a very extreme threat of rape. Having sort of inappropriate situations with supervisors at university, bosses who sort of sent me really weird emails that detailed their sexual fantasies. The list really went on and on. And when I asked other women, have you experienced anything like this? I couldn't believe the response. I thought maybe one or two people would say, oh yeah, once this thing happened to me, or I've got this story from a while back. But it wasn't like that at all. It was literally, on my way to meet you today, this happened. Most days in the office. One friend I spoke to who worked in the city said that the guys in her office will go to a strip club at lunchtime and sometimes take clients there, so she misses out on those deals. That if new women are coming to apply for positions in the office, they'll print out their pictures from the application form and rate them out of 10 across the office. And just the stories were just so much worse than I knew. And just like me, until I'd actually said to them, hey, has anything like this ever happened to you? And they thought about it. They never really said anything because they were so used to it.
If we were to, I'm just talking as you're talking there, if I was to see a picture of somebody and say, what do you think of this woman or man in this photograph? You'd be pretty much guaranteed, Laura, that everyone in the office would look around and will say, oh yeah, I would say yes, no, indifferent, or comment on them. So it works both ways, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's something that happens to men as well, and objectification of men in the media is something that happens as well. And men share their stories on the website. It's never been about men against women whatsoever, and it's very much something I think we all need to tackle together. Mm. But having said that, it is women that disproportionately face more of these incidents, and also there is obviously a wider backdrop of a dearth of women in high positions of business,
right,
and politics,
and also
and all of this.
And I would suspect that women are more inclined to take offence quicker than men are. That's what I would imagine.
Well, I think that perhaps it has a greater impact on women because of the kind of wider context of gender imbalance. So, for example, let's say a man and a woman both go off sick for a week from work, and they come back and sort of jokes are made to the man about man flu, which is sexist, right?
Is that
but
sexist as well?
Well, you know, I'm not saying for a minute that men couldn't say that was sexism, but it's unlikely to have a big impact on his career, right?
Go on.
If a woman comes back and people make jokes about her being pregnant because she's been sick, because of the workplace discrimination that women experience, that could actually have a really serious knock-on impact on her career. So I think you can look at isolated incidents, but the context is different, and I think that does have a difference in the impact it has.
Well, we're going to have to be very careful around you then, Laura, because, if you know, one would wonder where's the line between humour and comedy and acting the maggot, as we might say here, versus being ultimately very, very sensitive, hypersensitive to other people's emotional fragility when it comes to what one thought was a joke?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's such an old trope to suggest that feminists are uptight and humourless and bitter. And really, I just
You're not?
Think you wouldn't say that about somebody that was asking for equality when it came to race, for example, or sexuality. You know, it's not about saying you can't compliment someone. Of course not. It's not about saying you can't have a joke, you can't flirt. It's much deeper than that, really. And I think, actually, most people and the vast majority of perfectly lovely men really do know where that line is.
Well, I would imagine. So do your friends take you up on this, Laura? Do they say to you, well, can't say that around Laura. Here she comes now. She'll have us up in front of a tribunal.
Well, no, because I think most of my friends know me and know that I'm a laid-back, normal person. And, you know, the fact that even talking about gender equality means that you get these questions. Are you frigid? Are you uptight? Do you have a sense of humour? Just proves how far we still have to go.
For sure. You talk about the spectrum, and it's the lower end of the spectrum that I'm most intrigued by, because I think a lot of people who might be a bit dinosaur-y, and I probably can't count myself in there, wouldn't be au fait with what constitutes offence, if you like, now. And I wouldn't like to think I'm a stupid person or an ignorant person, but I certainly might be lacking in certain skills when it comes to that end of the spectrum.
Well, I think it just comes down to respect, really. If you have an interaction with someone that has respect at its root, then it doesn't mean that you can't sort of talk to them. It doesn't mean you can't strike up a flirty conversation. It doesn't mean you can't compliment them. But there's a huge difference between telling someone they look nice and, you know, hoping that it might lead to more, and shouting about someone's boobs as you drive by in a car for everyone to hear. Maybe a useful way to think about it, I think, is thinking about kind of your reasonable expectations about the outcome.
Yes.
And if you know that nothing's going to come out of it, then I'd say that's likely to be something about you doing something to her rather than about starting a kind of interaction that has respect at its root.
Does Miley Cyrus drive you mad?
No. It drives me mad when people focus on her and kind of say, oh, why is she doing this? This is outrageous and disgusting.
Yeah.
Instead of taking a step back and going, well, hang on, let's look at the world she's grown up in, which has sent her this message everywhere from, you know, when she was born, that as a woman, her looks are what she is and what she's valued by, that she has to, you know, use her body in this way, that women are sexualized, that women are treated as objects. She's not doing this in isolation. You know, it's not a coincidence that we're seeing male singers keeping their clothes on and singing, and so many female singers feeling that in addition to their singing talent, they also have to be incredibly sort of sexily dressed and doing raunchy dance moves.
So why did the world go completely bananas for the Cyrus Robin Thicke twerking thing all those months ago? Why was everyone so obsessed with that for about, they got a good 6 weeks out of that.
Yeah, well, I think partly because just sort of sex sells, and anything that's about a young woman not wearing very much is going to be in the headlines for a long time. What was interesting, though, was that no one was talking about Thicke in the headlines. No one was saying, what was he playing at? Why is he singing this song that kind of blurs the lines between, you know, consent and non-consensual sexual activity? Everything was just focused on her and kind of slut-shaming her, which says a lot as well, I think.
Is that an expression, slut-shaming?
Yeah, it is. And it comes back to this idea of kind of victim blaming. You know, it's tied in with the idea that you quite often hear people saying, well, she was asking for it. You know, what was she wearing? Had she been drinking?
Yeah. Well, you know, Joanna Lumley famously wrote in the Telegraph that women don't be sick in the gutter, girls, at midnight in a silly dress with no money to get a taxi home, because somebody will take advantage of you and may rape you.
Right, and the thing about those attitudes is that they're so harmful because they're just so far away from the truth. We know that 90%, roughly, of perpetrators of rape are known to their victims. So it's just not the case that a rapist is a stranger in a dark alleyway waiting for a girl to come along in a low-cut top. It's not about sexual attraction. It's about power and it's about violence. And, you know, the truth is women are actually less safe in their own homes because so many rapes take place in relationships and in marriages. And that idea that we focus on the victim is just so unhelpful because, of course, it lets perpetrators off the hook.
Yeah, for sure. Just moving into slightly less serious but equally, I think, important matters, which is women in politics. There's very few of them. Certainly in Ireland, it's a serious issue in most of the parties, and not to mention the government. So, do you think it's a good idea to have affirmative action to say you must have 2 women to every 10 men in a party or something like that, or do you think that that's just going to attract weak candidates?
I feel very torn about that. I don't think it will attract weak candidates because I think that anybody who suggests the system we have right now is equal and balanced is completely kidding themselves.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, we don't have such a massive majority of men because men are better at politics. There's so much more at play there, and the system at the moment, I think, is skewed towards men in lots of different ways. But to have affirmative action, for me, is kind of insulting to women.
Right,
because
so,
it
suggests what's, so what's
the
answer?
The problem is that they need a leg up.
Exactly.
Well, I think we need to attack this at every step. We need to attack the kind of sexist atmosphere within politics, the fact that we've got a Prime Minister in London telling women to calm down, dear, in the House of Commons. We need to attack the fact that when the media reports about the Tory party conference, for example, we hear about Osborne and Cameron's policies, but all we know about Theresa May is a big picture of what shoes she was wearing.
Shoes. Yeah, they're obsessed with her shoes.
And we need to attack it at the level of schoolgirls being told, oh, politics isn't for you. You know, that's a man thing.
It's funny, we opened this morning's programme with a member of Parliament to tears. We call them TDs here, a woman, a mother of 2, and probably one of the most formidable and able politicians in the country. She can do it. What's wrong with everyone else?
Well, it's partly about the fact that if you'd had a male politician on this morning, you wouldn't have told me that he was a father of 2. You wouldn't even have mentioned it, I think.
Yeah, true.
The way we look at women is so different, the way that we portray female politicians.
But we're having a discussion
about their looks first.
No, well, I didn't mention looks, but I'm just saying we're having a conversation about women in politics, and therefore it is absolutely relevant to mention the fact that she's a mother of 2, because most women will say to you, the reason there aren't more women in politics is because they are left in the so-called traditional role as being homemaker and therefore stay at home and look after the kids, and they haven't time to get into politics as well.
Yeah, I definitely think that's part of it. And I think that looking at issues like flexible working hours and more shared parental leave and encouraging kind of social attitudes around that to change is a really important thing towards helping women in the workplace, in business and in politics. But I also think that there are extremely sexist attitudes that women are confronting, whether it's actually within politics itself from their male peers, whether it's from the media or just from the general public. And, you know, ideas around, I go into classrooms sometimes and I talk about these figures in Parliament and I ask the kids, why do you think this is? And you get answers from really young kids of 9 or 10 saying things like, well, they don't want to be told what to do by a woman, do they? You know, these ideas are really deeply ingrained, I think, and so normalised.
What do you think of Bill Clinton?
In any particular sense?
Not really.
Well, I think that it would be fantastic if his wife ran for president.
But I wasn't asking about her.
I don't really understand what you mean. Do you mean as a politician?
Well, let's say a politician. Do you think he was a good president?
I'm afraid that it's not an area that I'm massively cleared up on to be able to
reflect on. But yet, do you think that Hillary Clinton would be a great president?
I think so. I think she's shown a really, really fantastic track record. I think she's shown that she's able to stand up and really hold her ground on unpopular issues. And she's done a huge amount for women, and I think it would be a real step forward.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think she's a tremendous politician, probably one of my favourites doing the rounds at the moment. And yet, when she laughs, they call it the Clinton cackle. What?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every female politician you care to look at, there's something like that. If you look at Angela Merkel, you'll find stories about her sort of unsexy haircut and her frumpy page boy suits. If you look at, you know, there was a feature in The Sun a while back called The Best of Breastminster. I mean, anywhere you look, you'll find that female politicians, they're jumping through hoops that their male colleagues aren't having to deal with.
Okay, was Hillary Clinton right to stand by her man, by the way, do you think?
I think that's a really, really personal question. And I think that, you know, it's really interesting that we hold women to these particularly high moral standards when they're in the public eye and kind of judge them for them, perhaps in a way that we wouldn't in the same way with men.
Well, he was judged.
Really
he was impeached.
I think it's really difficult to comment on that, you know, not knowing their relationship and what went on inside it and with only the media perspective. But what I do think is amazing is that she's managed to completely rise above and leave behind that storyline and very much is now seen for her own career in politics.
The foreword of your book is written by Sarah Brown, the wife of the former Prime Minister Gordon Brown, and she mentions that she says everyday sexism and this book are not verdicts on men, they are resources for men. So it's for people like me, that is to say men, who as a manual as to how to behave appropriately, I suppose.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's partly a kind of eye-opener. The idea is to sort of set out what people are dealing with and what these stories that we've had from women all over the world have told us that they are facing in 2012. But it does also kind of give a call to arms. It suggests that all of us, men and women, can be part of standing up and changing this. And, you know, you won't find any judgment in there. It's absolutely not, all men are bad or evil. It's never been about men against women. It's about people against prejudice.
All right. Laura, thank you for your time this morning. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. That's Laura Bates there. She is the author of Everyday Sexism, and that book is available to those who want to see it. And you can see Laura out doing a TED Talk on YouTube too if you want to watch her in action there.